Welcome, 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 everyone, to Sunday Civics, the show for the civically engaged. I am your host and civics teacher, Eljoy Williams. And on today's episode, we're talking about lady parts. You heard me correctly. We're talking about lady parts. So plan to be a little bit uncomfortable. Even I'm probably going to be a little bit uncomfortable as we go through this episode. But specifically, we're talking about the fight to preserve and expand women's rights to determine what's best for our own lady parts, because no one should be in control of our lady parts except for the lady who owns the parts. And to have this conversation with me, I got my thorough with squirrels with me.
Damn.
I got June, my civic accomplice. June like the month, Moses like the Bible. Hey, June.
What's good? Eljoy Williams, political strategist. How are your lady parts?
They're fine. Thank you very much.
That's wonderful.
Okay. And then guess who's back?
Who's back?
Laree Daniel Favors.
Oh my God, I missed you guys so much.
You didn't miss us. You
did.
Was out being a lawyer.
I was lawyering for the civil rights of the people.
For the civil rights of the community.
Yes, for the peoples. And we got so much lawyering to do. So much more lawyering.
I saw
to go.
You all over the place and talking about the census. Remember, you know, you heard it here first, folks.
You really did. Mm-hmm. You really
like,
did.
Like, we mm-hmm. were talking about the census.
Long time.
Like, last year, and everybody mm-hmm. was mad at me about something. And I so want to be petty and, like, message the people back.
You could be a little petty.
Do it.
You was mad at me, mm-hmm. and you was asking me why I was talking about the census so early. And now look at you.
Look.
Now look at you trying to be part of the coalition and trash.
Look. If you know what,
I'm not gonna be petty.
No,
though.
We can't be petty.
I say
on
be
the
petty.
Air.
Oh, well, whatever. I'll be petty for you. Give me the list. Give me the list. I'll be petty for you.
Well, I have an expansion to my thorough with girls.
A good one.
Today, a very good one. Mm-hmm. Joining us for this conversation today, for the whole entire episode, is one of my favorites. I love her so much, and I haven't seen her in like 6 months of Sundays. I know the phrase is a month of Sundays, but it's like literally been a 6 month of Sundays. Liz Winstead is with us. Welcome to the show.
Yay.
Liz.
Good morning. Thank you. I know. I have been also, we're just all, you know, it's the dumpster fire, and it's like we can't even get to, this is all part of the evil plan is to keep us apart. Because otherwise, right?
Yes.
I mean, the chaos is so crazy that we can't see each other. We can't even brunch.
We can't go to, like,
there's no brunch. There's no joy. Like, I literally woke up today to that crazy Donald Trump tweet of, like, you know, I'm just sending missiles someplace. And I was like, do I even get dressed? Should I buy green bananas anymore? Like, what is happening?
Because you don't even know if you have enough time for them to write.
Well, they know. I don't know where I'm going to be tomorrow. But I knew today I would be here. So that gave me hope. I had a plan.
You had a plan.
All right.
And it really is a plot to keep us running. And I've said it on the show before, is to keep us running from crisis to crisis, that we don't have time to plan. We don't have time to build coalition. We don't have time to fight back. And that's really what this is designed to do. It's like you're trying to put out fires here and there. Meanwhile, you know, there's a raging one on the second floor and you on the 12th floor and, you know, people are screaming out from the window, come help me. And then you got to send Laree to go to be a lawyer to try to get people out of
meanwhile,
jail.
Meanwhile, my own block is on fire.
Right. Meanwhile, we couldn't park on a block yesterday. I was trying to record a YouTube video. Got June yelling at me for being late and because Con Ed was out there. Like, there's too much stuff going on.
Too much.
It's way too much going
on. I'm tired.
But, you know, even though there's a lot going on, what we try to provide you here on the show and really on SiriusXM Review over the course of the entire channel is to give you some direction, some tools that you can use, some resources, some things that you can do to take civic action in your communities, in your neighborhood, really in this country, because that's really what we need people to do. And if you haven't already, I need you to pledge to be part of our plan for each of you who are listening to this show to register 10 people for 2018. This is part of Urban View Vote's initiative. There's a whole website, urbanviewvote.com, where you can go to. You can use it to help register people to vote. There's a tool there that you can use, because I think it's in over 30 states. You can actually register to vote online in individual states there. So use that resource. And actually, if you go to SundayCivics.org, June helped me put together this nice little guide that you can, you know, download and use. It has sample text messages and tweets and Facebook posts that you can use, not for like your millions of followers. I'm talking about the people you know.
See, everybody needs someone like June to make the movement work. Like that type of granular technicality, like paying attention to who you're languaging to. That's the type of people we need active in this movement.
Well, because most of the time when people are saying we need you to go register people and things, people think you need to go register strangers.
Right.
But it's the stat that I remind people about all the time. We talk about it on the show. Over 60% of people say they've never been asked to register to vote, Liz, from a family member, from their church, if they attend church, from their school, from a teacher, right? So the places that people are frequently frequenting, even their own folks ain't asking them to register to vote and to get engaged.
Well, and I would also just add that as we watch over and over again, horrible things like over-policing and cops walking free and juries saying, you know, skate on, person that shot a person that didn't have a weapon. If you are not registered to vote, you are not in a jury pool. So our jury pools are tainted. That's so it's super important. Second thing I would say is I come from Minnesota, one of the greatest states in America that has same day registration. So if you're from a state that has same day voting, I would propose to you, you get 20 people to vote because you don't have to worry about it in your state.
You don't have to worry about a deadline.
You don't have a deadline. So find your neighboring state and find out, like, if you're there, like in Minnesota, go to Wisconsin. Pull it together, because stuff's happening in Wisconsin. You could be helpful.
That's awesome.
I'm just saying.
10 Wisconsin, for 2018.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, 10 for 2018.
25-minute drive from the Twin Cities. Go forth.
Go forth and register.
And register.
Well, we need you to be part of that initiative, 10 for 2018, to register folks. And if you listened to Karen's show this week, you heard me talk about five places that you could register people to vote, locations, off the beaten path locations.
Grab that person off your couch.
I'm saying.
Couch surfer.
Apparently, people still stand in line for the club.
Because, you know, we left that in the 20s.
No, we don't.
No, we didn't.
That. I'm grown. I stand in line for
grown to be
some people
club.
Stand
no
in line.
No. Well, Liz, I have Liz performs, yeah, Liz I performs at clubs, so she don't need to stand in line.
No, but I have voter registration at every one of my shows.
Listen.
Yes!
You see what I'm talking about?
And when we get to talking about what I do, you're going to be super psyched. I'm just going to say.
Automated parts are registered.
All about it. I teach people how to write with their labias.
Oh,
great.
My God.
No, I don't.
Remember, I did say in the beginning of the show, be prepared to possibly be uncomfortable, myself included. All right, folks.
Are your children in the room? You might want to send them to the other room.
I mean, no, the children have lady parts. My child got lady parts. She needs to understand this as much as this child that don't have lady parts.
That's why Miss June ain't got no kids, y'all. Nope. See, I would have done it all wrong. Kids just wanting out there in the street, don't know about their lady parts.
Oh my gosh. Well, ladies, guess what time it is?
What time is it?
I know what time it
is. I miss this time so much.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's time for the Civic Docket.
It's time for the Civic Docket.
What?
It's time for the Civic Docket.
Break it down now.
It's time for the Civic Docket.
Y'all doing remixes and everything. I cannot. All right. So, look, there's a huge amount of women running for elected office for the first time.
Thank the goddesses.
Wonderful.
Girl power.
Yes, thank the goddesses that this is happening. And they're particularly inspired, as Liz was talking about the chaos. And, you know, leave it up to women. You see chaos and it's like, you know what? I'm just going to run in there and try to, like, I'm going to run in there and fix it real quick.
Yeah, we always do that.
It's on the way to the store.
Right. They in my way. I got a list to get through. Like,
just add it to the list. I'll get to it. Let's go.
Let me just run for office real quick and win and like teach them how this stuff is supposed to go. So, but with more women entering the political space and leadership overall, I should say, because we also see a number of women taking over in boardrooms and corporate America and things like that as well. We're going to start to see, hopefully, more conversations about the needs of women because we're in these spaces, right? And particularly what we need, like our daily needs. All right. I'll give you an example. When more women, particularly white women, entered the workforce, because as I try to tell the hoteps on Twitter all the time, women of color have always worked. Women of color and poor women have mm-hmm. always had to work. So mm-hmm. like there's a particular class, and also white women who entered the workforce. We begin to have public conversations about childcare.
Yeah.
Because who's going to watch our kids if we're now somebody's secretary? Mm-hmm. You know, and which used to be a man's job and now it's perceived as a woman's job, but you know, whatever. So if more women are running for office, the question I have is who going to watch our kids?
Mm.
And particularly I bring this up because a woman who's running, she's a mother of two, a progressive activist. She's running here in New York in the 2nd District. She's running for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked the FEC if she can use campaign funds for childcare.
Good for her.
At least she asked and they didn't come out and get her after.
Because you know,
hello, that would have
you
been
know
a
how things happen. And I talk about this on the show. Sometimes you see headlines about people misusing funds and it really is like, you know, misunderstanding or didn't get approval and things like that. And in fact, there was a male legislator who asked the FEC, Liz, to use funds to have his wife and child travel with him. It was for his wife to travel with him, I think, at one point. And then another person asked for to use campaign funds to pay for childcare as well. But that didn't, you know, that case didn't become precedent because it wasn't like you didn't have all of the judges there at the same, you know, at the time. So it didn't become precedent. But this would be huge because a large part of me going around to convince women to run for office around this country is, well, I'm primary caregiver, you know, for our children. What's going to happen if I'm now going to spend a year running for office and not getting paid? Like, mm-hmm. so how I'm gonna pay for childcare and who gonna watch my kids? Because I don't have kids. Backup.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna have to have these public conversations about the fact that women have all of this other work that we do that doesn't get paid, right? There's all of this other work. So in a survey of potential female candidates, this is the Brookings Institute, found that women are 15 times more likely than men to be responsible for the majority of childcare.
Right, because that's important, because there are fathers who are in positions of
right.
power and who are in Congress and all at the highest office of the land, and no one is worrying
ask
about
them
childcare.
Who watching
for them.
Your kids?
They babysit their kids.
Yeah.
They don't caregive. They babysit.
They babysit. And
so
when you hear
that
is a boiling point. But also, I just want to say that if we want an egalitarian system where people that we see ourselves as elected representatives, that means, and who are the people getting screwed the most by all these policies? Poor women, women of color,
right.
single moms. So if we can't get single moms at the table, we know a bunch of rich white guys aren't going to prioritize our issues.
Right.
Nope.
And nor should they, because they do not have our lived experience. So to not be able to have your lived experience in the public sphere, in legislative bodies, proposing laws that are going to make lives better, it just seems like perfect that you would... It should be a no-brainer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping, I mean, they have precedent, right? The FEC has allowed this before. I'm hoping that this will, you know, they will make a decision and then it will become precedent. And then women can really use their campaign funds to have, you know, you hire a campaign manager, you hire a communications consultant, you know, to be able to use those funds to also have someone watch your kids or even be with you. I posted on my Facebook this morning about, you know, I have a 2-year-old. You know, a godchild in our home. And talking about that 15%, I think it was, that are primary caregivers, Larie.
Right.
I internalize that I'm the primary, even though I'm married and have a partner. I believe that it's my responsibility on who's taking care of the child. So there's also an internalized discussion as well.
Right.
Right. And my husband tries to, like, let's have a discussion about what's on whose schedule and, like, we'll figure it out. Like, why do you feel that you're the only person responsible for this?
I think a lot of that internalization, we see that in the workforce generally. Like, I remember when I was in corporate America, you know, and women law partners who had children almost never talked about their children. You didn't even see pictures of the family necessarily because it was all perceived as a negative strike. It was going to prevent you from climbing the ranks to partner. And there was almost an embrace of, I can be more masculine than the boys in the women's culture, in the women leadership culture. And I'm really glad to see that we are more comfortable having conversations that center our needs as women in a woman framework without saying, I have to not address this issue because men don't have to address this issue. And I can't be in leadership unless I can be as masculine as the men. And by masculine, I mean not have the worries that women typically have. So I can either I'm going to not have children, or if I have children, I'm going to be comfortable being like the men that we talked about a minute ago who never see their children without saying, no, I'm a mom. And that's a central part of who I am. And regardless of how the different ways between men and women or mothers and fathers relate to childcare generally, like if I'm someone who centers childcare as important to my life, no, I'm bringing my daughter to the meeting. If you want me at the meeting, I may have to have a package deal. And there was a time when I feel like women weren't comfortable saying that. And I'm glad to see that that's shifting a bit. It needs to shift more, but I'm glad to see that it's starting to shift.
Yeah.
And I also think, too, that's why we can't talk about this table. We just have smashed this existing table. More women at the table. No, smash the table. Yes. The table smash was built without considering any of the amazing things that you just thought of. You know, nobody, it doesn't even dawn on people to say, who invented 9 to 5? Like, why is that a thing? Like, I don't think I was ever asked. No woman was ever asked.
That is so true.
You know, and so to think about that, I mean, structurally, how things work, also acting like everybody lives in the same time zone you do, has the same stuff. So for me, I'm always like, we don't need more women at the table. We need women to take that table, smash it to pieces, get rid of it, and then have a conversation about what does inclusivity look like? Is it a couch? Yeah. Is it a stool? Are you at a standing desk? Like, what is it?
Are we all on pillows in a circle on the floor?
More importantly.
Whatever it is.
That's right. And where's the space for the kids?
Yeah. Because they also need to be cared
for. Right. Yeah.
So there Love needs it. To be space for that. And I hear you, June. It is my pet peeve to hear men say, I have to babysit. Oh, my God. I got into an argument with a friend of, like, one of my closest friends. And he was like, oh, I got to babysit my daughter. I was like, that doesn't make sense. He was like, what do you mean? I'm not supposed to have her this weekend. I was like, you can never babysit your child. It is your child. You are caring for your child. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's listening who feel, oh, I got to babysit my kid, you cannot. It is impossible for you to babysit your child. You are caring for your child, whether or not you and the parent, the mother are together or not. You are caring for your child, not babysitting. That's
and
just a
no, even if it's not your weekend, if something happens to that custodial parent, it's going to be all your weekends. So let's just set that framework right now.
Jeez.
Because the emotional needs of that child do not end when you clock out of your quote-unquote daycare system.
Oh, my God.
God
anyway.
Bless all y'all. And look at me when y'all have old people, because it's the same thing, except old people have agency and no one wants to watch over somebody because they might die on them. So talk to me when we get to that.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a whole show on elder care.
Yes.
All right. So I read this other piece on NPR, Moving On. And the title of it is What We Mean When We Talk About Suburban Woman Voters. And it dawned on me that we use a lot, particularly in a political discourse, we use a lot of phrases and expect people to know what we mean. And in fact, something that can seem to be inclusive of everyone, right? You're talking about suburban women voters. You just think of women who live in the suburbs, right?
No. No. I think of white ladies.
Right. Well, that's because we're also more advanced. But for those of us, and that's exactly what it means. The focus of it, of suburban women voters, is particularly focused on not only white women, but white women who are married and got kids. And more than likely, in a campaign sense, they tend to be or have in the past tend to be conservative or Republican. And what's interesting is that kind of language is shifting, because also another article I wanted to share with you. I know I've yelled this from the rooftops before that black people are not a monolith. Talking about the diversity of black political views as well. And there is this viewpoint that all black people live in inner cities, like we all live in a ghetto. We all live in, like, if you live in Brooklyn, you all live in Marcy and Tompkins houses, where Jay-Z and Biggie lived.
Because there's no other place.
Because there's no other place where black people could possibly live. You can't live in Williamsburg because that's where the hippies live.
Right. I used to live in Williamsburg.
But it's actually more accurately 40% of blacks in a recent survey said they live in the suburbs. And 19% of black folks live in rural
areas.
Didn't
you grow up in the suburbs?
I did.
So did I.
Yeah. So we didn't exist?
We weren't real?
You weren't brought up in crack houses with a single parent?
No.
Oh my God, no.
Who knew?
Our little town had one crack house, though.
I came here for an experience of black people, and I am sorely being let down by all of you.
You want your tour money back?
Well, you seem very articulate. I don't know what's happening.
We speak so well.
You do speak so well.
Oh, the accent. Oh, right? My God.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my God.
I feel like I have sister friends now.
So over the past,
Poor Eljoy, every time I know she can't.
The fact is also that that classification of they find new ways, Liz, to come up with a descriptive term that just doesn't mean white women. Because remember, there was this whole focus of soccer moms. I think that was during Carrie Edwards.
We grew up with soccer moms. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that was like my high school
soccer moms are right
era.
After latchkey kids.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Moms like got the phrase, back in the
picture. Like the phrasing and stuff like that of soccer moms. And then it was like after September 11th, it was like security helicopter parent, you know, like all of those kind of phrases. Right. And all of it just means white women.
Yeah.
It just means married white women.
And what I think is so hilarious is that like, internationally, soccer moms are not white women.
Right.
They're not white women. So that cracks me up completely. So I know. Why don't they just say white women? You know, just say it.
They're just so...
Because I'm not black, I'm urban. That's why.
And if they say white women, then they have to say black woman when it's appropriate, not people of color or women of color. Mm-hmm. And we have to get very specific about everybody, even when it's uncomfortable to categorize the person in that particular sense.
You're making me uncomfortable, Lori.
Because if I had to talk about black crack babies as opposed to the crack epidemic
they're
in the urban
crack babies.
Right, you see how different that sounds? If I'm trying to sway a particular population, it's all about the nuanced.
So are those suburban women on the opioids? Is that what's happening?
On the opioids?
On the opioids. That's right.
Well, they're not on the crack.
But also, I feel like there's this constant story between, like, this constant story of assuaging the, whatever euphemism we're using, I'm just going to say white women, and these poor, disenfranchised white men who somehow can't find a job, and we're all supposed to feel sorry for them because they trained to fix 8-track tape players 25, 40 years ago and never learned another skill, and so we feel sorry for them. But if it's
I got to pull myself up by my bootstraps, but I don't get boots nor straps.
That's right.
I need to make it work.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, the double standard of how we talk about who we need to engage and why, and every time some guy calls me the C word on Twitter, I'm like, is that your economic disenfranchisement talking? Because I kind of feel like you just might be sexist and hate women.
Like, you're still mad at your mom, aren't you?
I know, right? Seriously, it's like, mad. I don't, and you know, when like, oh, meet the Nazi who lives down the street. He's just like you and I. We have to reach across the I'm not reaching across the I don't want to talk to you. You have terrible, you have a terrible moral fiber and core and center, and you don't want to listen. And also, why do we always have to be reaching out to people and finding their thing? I hate that.
I know. It's our job. You know, I recently, someone tweeted someone else's link to me, and I realized I couldn't see the tweet because the person had me blocked. Oh. And I was like, interested.
You got blocked?
Somebody blocked me. I was like, I wonder what I did. I was like, so excited to figure out. And so, like, I did some sleuthing, and it turns out that he responded to a tweet. I have a tweet from back, like, in 2015 where I said, I don't debate with people who are intellectually inferior, and it has nothing to do whether or not you went to school. And so he responds, he was like, you don't try to educate them. And I was like, that's not my role.
That's not your job.
And I was like, I don't, like, it's not my job to educate someone who is clearly racist or sexist that I have to prove my humanity to. I was like, that may be somebody else's calling to be able to demonstrate, here, black people have humanity. Like, that's not my, like, that's not what I'm looking to do.
That's not on the way to the stove.
And it doesn't make any difference.
Because because I said, to me, that means that you are intellectually inferior. And then it, for me, it would be unfair for me to have a debate or a conversation because I'm like, I'm clearly better than you.
Yeah.
Because I'm intellectually, you know, superior than you. So it is not in my best interest to have a debate with you because you don't have all the tools. Your arms are too short.
Your fingers are too small.
His feelings were too hurt, so he blocked you?
So he blocked me.
My God.
But also proving your point. Like, profoundly, like, I don't want to... Oh, wait, bye. Okay. I think that's the trickiest navigation for all of us is... When do you want to expend the energy?
Right.
You know, someone's a good person and literally they are just learning and don't know, you know, like, you know, you got a whole bunch of suburban women who found politics somehow after the Hillary election and you have to be super mad, like, where have you been? But then you're like, okay, you're here. So talk to me about why you're here. And are you somebody who I can say, whether you knew it or not, you had a whole bunch of power you never used or you didn't engage and you weren't intersectional. And now you're going to learn a whole bunch of stuff from people. So come with me. And now you're going to learn to be the pack mule in a whole bunch of struggles. You're going to hear from people who you've never heard from before and you're going to learn lessons and you're going to do a lot of listening. Instead of asking, because that way you don't put somebody in the position of saying, tell me about why it's been so hard for you. It's like, you know, you sat there and paid attention and learned and made the effort. And that way you can say, if I'm hearing this correctly, I can be helpful this way. And it's like, yes, you can. Go forth and be helpful.
Very good.
Yeah.
Right?
Run that PayPal money.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, guys. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Liz Winstead, specifically her journey to life.
Oh, my gosh.
Her journey to life. My husband hates the word journey.
That's my niece's name. Oh, my God.
No, not the names. He hates people using the phrase because he feels like it's
journey.
Over. Yeah, yeah. Yes, he hates that.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on Sunday Civics.
Welcome back to Sunday Civics here on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126. I'm your host, L. Joy Williams. Back to the show for the Civically Engaged. And we're talking today with Liz Winstead, my girl. My girl. She's a comedian, writer, producer, and professional troublemaker. She's known as one of the top political comedians and satirists. How do you say that word?
Satirist.
Satirist. Satirist.
Miley Cyrus. Whatever.
I know and love Liz because we've met and we connected personally through a mutual friend, and she's helped change the landscape of how people get their news. And she lends her talent, her treasure, her time, talent, and treasure. Remember, we talk about those things to raise money and support the work of women's health organizations and specifically clinics that offer abortions a necessary service to women. And so in 2012, she founded Lady Parts Justice. It's an organization dedicated to raising awareness of legislative attempts to block women's reproductive freedoms. We're going to talk about some of those coming up, but I want to go to the beginning. And Liz, I want to ask you this question. We ask all of our guests this question. What was your first civic action?
Well, I thought about this question because I knew it was coming. And it comes from a funny, self-serving, but monumental space. And that was, as a young girl, I was just trying to find my way. And you know, in that age of like 11 years old or 12, and the only way that you can make any money is babysitting. I didn't really want to babysit. So what I did notice was the boys my age were at the Catholic Church. I was brought up Catholic, serving weddings and funerals, and they would get paid. and they got paid more than we got paid babysitting. Mm, so wow. I went to the priest and I was like, I want to be an altar boy. And he looked at me panicked and clearly was like, well, it's called altar boy, so you can't. And I was like, well, that seems like an easy fix. Like, you could call it altar person or server. You know, I thought this was a joke. And he was like, no, we don't allow, the church doesn't allow girls to do that. Huh. And I was like, and I wasn't trying to be problematic. I was just like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't have to lift like an anvil or anything. I just want to do what those boys are doing and make money, was what I said myself.
But and
I was
particularly like, they make more money.
Yes. And so then I was like, this, I said, well, who do I talk to about that? And he's like, well,
God,
just go home. But he was like, the archbishop, you write a letter to the archbishop. And so the archbishop in my town at the time was, the worst kept secret was that he was a giant drunk. So I got a petition of all but like seven girls to, and they signed it. We would like to be altar boys. Can we have a meeting? And we sent it off and never heard from the archbishop. But the archbishop did literally, and you can Google it, Google Archbishop Roach, Archdiocese Minneapolis, drunk car, 7-Eleven.
Oh my.
Drove his car into a 7-Eleven drunk. Might have been during Lent also.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. But it was my first taste of like, I can't believe it. This makes no sense to me. And I took action in the way I knew, which was to get my girlfriends to write a letter to see if we could get to the archbishop, and we never did. But now girls can be servers in the Catholic Church. That's all they can do, but they can do that.
But what's interesting about that is that's basic organizing principles, right? Yeah, it's determining, like, well, who do I talk to about that? Like, finding who the decision maker is.
Yeah.
And then getting people, organizing people together where there's 17 or 700 to join you in the effort, and then, you know, demanding action on that. So it's like basic is organizing 101.
Well, and it was also just a thing where, I guess as a kid, if somebody told me something that didn't make sense to me, I would push it. It's not like I was trying to cause trouble all the time, but I think my brain moves so fast that if somebody just said, well, they can't do that because, and then they didn't have a good answer for it, I was like, I just need you to make me understand that. You know, if my mom said, you have to wear two pairs of socks inside your boots because we can't get you new boots till next year, and your feet are going to get wet. Oh, okay, I get that, right? But if I don't understand it, I'm going to push back. It was always a problem.
That has always been a problem. And as you mentioned, you were raised Catholic in the Midwest.
Yes.
So are you the suburban women that we're I am talking about?
Actually, funnily enough, I'm not. I grew up right in the city with five kids. Like, we were that poor Catholic family that lived in a lower middle class neighborhood.
Oh, so you're urban.
I am urban, believe it or not.
And challenging pay inequities at 12 years old.
I am an urban. So five. My dad was a bookie growing up. My mom worked for the priests, making lunch. And so, it was always a challenge. And Christmas was really a challenge because you never knew what was happening. Christmas was like, how'd the line come in? And that's how you knew Christmas. It's like, oh, what are we getting for Christmas? Oh, something bad happened with some guy that, I don't know. So I was actually somebody, but great. My parents were fun and my siblings are really great and active. And, you know, I grew up in a time, I'm the youngest of five kids and I'm 56 years old. And so I had this crazy gamut of siblings where my oldest sister's 70. Wow. And so she came from this kind of like beehive dancing Motown thing. And then the three other siblings were like Vietnam War activists, anti-Vietnam War activists. And then 6 years passed and then I was born.
Oopsie.
Like, I know, Catholic mistake, right? Crazy. So I had this gamut of activism. My parents were really conservative and, you know, Catholicism, that was like a lot of stuff happened like right away with me where I was just like, I don't understand any of this. I don't understand why women aren't in power because I grew up in a family of a mom, four sisters, and a brother. And it was like, we're all super self-sufficient. I don't understand how this church thing is set up where, again, there's no heavy lifting involved. It's not the Olympics of religion. Like, why is it that there is not women in this religious affiliation?
How do you reconcile now? And I do see you talking on Twitter and, you know, on stage a lot talking about this, in that there's all this focus following the election of Midwest voters, and we need to understand them, yeah, and sort of the economic anxiety that they're feeling. And that explains their racism and sexism. Like, right, really, you know, if you have economic anxiety, white people are just going to be racist. Like, you should just be comfortable with that.
Right.
Like, I mean, be sexist with that.
Well, and I just don't buy it for a second, because I feel like we can talk about anxiety all we want, but if you're going to try to make excuses for the privilege, the most privileged class of people, white men, even in whatever economic status you have, you do not experience anything that other people walk the earth feeling. So the insecurity you bring upon yourself is because the privilege you've been given is now running, your clock is running out. Mm. And now it is time to look at people who are talented. All of a sudden, there are many people, you are being found out by people who excel. And therefore, you're going to lash out. And for me, I'm like, I refuse to allow you to lash out because of your lesser than when you have had it all this time. Sorry, you didn't excel. You're being found out by many people who are more brilliant than you. And sorry, like, I don't buy it, and I don't defend it. And I think it's pretty crappy to try to keep creating scenarios where we 100% ignore the racism and the sexism and the homophobia that is literally been the building blocks of your privilege on top of it all. Mm. And so I'm like, fuck that. You know, I mean, it makes zero sense to me. And on the chain, you know, I think it's like white men, white women. I don't know how it goes after that. But
oh, the,
like,
totem pole?
Right, yeah, if I'm on the totem pole.
I'm on
so,
the bottom.
Yeah, are you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, it's just like, I don't know. It just, and when I saw, like, that it was hard for me, I was like, if it's hard for me, basically second on the, I can have pretty much what I need and phone it in when I need to. You know, like, even white women who are like, it's hard, you know, at the end of the day, a white woman can just decide, I'm just going to get married. Mm. You know, I'm just going to get married, and maybe I'm not going to have all my dreams, but I'll have all the stuff I want, and I'm going to just make that okay. And, you know, when you can decide to opt out of the realities of life, that in and of itself is privilege. You know, like, we don't talk about the layers of it. And then I think a lot of times women, white women, when the shit is hard and it's just true patriarchy and we're suffering from it, they don't understand that they still have it better than women of color and black women have had it. And so that conversation never really happens. And it's like, when black women are saying, please understand your privilege, like, it's not an insult. It's just a request of knowing your own history. And so for me, I did, like, you know, we went back and I was laughing, like, do a lot of listening. But at some point you have to do a lot of listening. And then I did a lot of listening, you know, becoming a comedian diversified my life profoundly. Mm. And I just really lucked out that, you know, I grew up in an urban area and worked in restaurants where I just met a lot of people who didn't look like me and who just brought experiences that weren't like mine. And I think I just, maybe it's just luck that I found it interesting and that I found it, that I wanted to care about it. I, you know, I don't, because I'm not anything special, but I think that literally me just being open to new ideas and wanting to hear about new people's experiences and wanting a world that felt like good for everybody just put me in a spot. And here I am in this spot.
I talked about in introducing you about helping to sort of create this new landscape of how people get news, that it's, you know, comedy, but it's also real, like, facts. And at some point, sometimes you can get facts from these shows that you think are comedy, and you can't from the shows that are supposed to be factual, right? And so connected to that, you were part of the founding of Air America, co-creator of The Daily Show and head writer of The Daily Show. Talk to us about sort of how... I guess in this time and in this space, it was ripe to create that kind of mix of comedy and news to deal with where we are.
I think when we launched, it was a little bit even ahead of where I had been paying attention a long time to the news. I mean, I've always been a feminist and political, and but I think it was back at that, you know, before many of you were even born, youngsters, you know, back in 1991, and just also watching.
I was there.
Yes. Watching people in power sending people who were not in power to die to retain their power, not to create a healthier democracy, right? So that meant sending people to war, lying to people about war. And back in the 90s, in 1991, when my comedy kind of shifted from being just an observational comic to politics, was really when CNN was the only news channel, and they launched this war, and it was the first time anybody watched a war in their living room kind of unfold. And all of a sudden, there was these really attractive people on the news, and there was a theme song, and there was graphics, and all this stuff was happening. And people were like, this is really cool. And it's like, no, you're being manipulated to think that war is something we win like a game, and now you're in it, and you don't have any, you're never going to have to fight this war. And then I just remember thinking, are they trying to report on a war or sell me a war? Mm-hmm. And when I really got the feeling they were trying to sell me a war, I just decided that I needed to talk about that. And being on stage as a woman, that's just a radical act in and of itself. When you are a woman and decide to take the stage and start to phrase sentences with, I think, and then you go for it, like, you know, that's just it. So you might as well just talk about things you think about that are important that maybe you could get people wrapped up into. And I think when The Daily Show came to be, people just saw my comedy be that. And I had been observing the media as much as I had been the politicians, and I held them incredibly accountable. People forget that CNN, you know, ratcheted up and got big ratings because of the war. And when that war was winding down and those newscasters were figuring out how are we going to keep the emotions up of people, Rodney King happened. Mm. And they got the message of, look at this racial disparity that's happening in front of me on TV. All they wanted to do was keep that emotion going. And that emotion went for a really long time. And so by the time The Daily Show came, it was built on a media that had basically foregone news and had just ratcheted up fear, and it kept going. And so the show, when we developed it, was definitely holding the medium itself as accountable as the media makers that were in it. And so my act became that, and then the show became that. I'd never done a show like that before. I was literally talking out of my ass. Like, I sat in a room with executives like, I really think we should. And they were like, okay. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to learn how to do that right there. So, yeah.
Wow. I love it. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about our lady parts. And particularly, I don't know if you guys know this, but people are being jailed for having miscarriages.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are laws being passed, Senate Bill 340, we're going to talk about in Indiana, which requires doctors to keep records of people's abortions. So we'll talk about that. But I got to pay a bill. And so we're going to go to our friends Lola and Doe, who are the number one provider of all natural and organic personal care goods for the entire family. I personally, June, use the coconut chocolate butter bar and the organic body wash. And I just ordered, they just have a new line of lip scrubs, and I just ordered the lemon pound cake lip scrub. Ooh, yeah. You can visit their website at lolaanddoe.com and mm-hmm. check out all of the natural products like the apricot body oil. I forgot how apricot smells. You don't get apricots unless you go to like Whole Foods or something. They don't sell them in the local grocery store anymore. Sure. They also have organic talk-free baby powder.
And
Yeah, no talk. Wonderful. Yes. And now you can no longer worry about them running out. They would always sell out of a lot of their soaps because it's so popular. Mm-hmm. But now you don't have to worry about that because every month you can get it to come to your doorstep. Because they've now debuted monthly subscription boxes. It's easy to sign up. No hidden fees. And wait for it. Free shipping. Yes. So shop and subscribe at lolaanddoe.com and get 10% off your order when you use our promo code Civics at checkout. That's lolaanddoe.com. Use the promo code Civics at checkout. Go to lolaanddoe.com where natural is universal. Welcome back. Controversy. All right. Welcome back to Sunday Civics, the show for the civically engaged. Eljoy Williams here with Liz Winstead, professional troublemaker. And before we left, I made mention that people were going to jail for miscarriages. And, you know, I'm going to tell you about the story. The story is in El Salvador. It's one of, even though... a lot of the countries in Latin America are moving, lifting the restrictions that were in existence on abortion. A lot of them are lifting the restrictions. There are five or six that still maintain there's no abortion for anybody. I don't care if your life in danger. Nobody's having abortions. And this story that I found in the Times, they were talking about this new campaign in El Salvador, Liz, where they're trying to use social media, they're trying to use education and everything. Their representatives have introduced bills to try to at least the bare minimum of like a woman's life is in danger in allowing abortion to occur. And, you know, you may be saying, Joy, that's in El Salvador. It's not in the United States. Mm. You know, it's not something that you should be concerned about. Mm. But in Indiana, they just passed a new law, Senate Bill 340. It requires that doctors gather data about women who came to see them about abortion complications. Yeah. So the doctors then have to, it's a reporting requirement. And you may think, in general, that this, oh, maybe they're just trying to collect data and information to see if there's some trends, which, you know, maybe you should need. If there's some trends, maybe, you know, women go into one particular doctor or, you know, in a cluster of people, you may think it's innocent. No, you just need that information. But here's the detailed information they have to provide. It's the location, the date of the abortion, prior treatments for complications. Also, the county that the woman lives in, her state of residence, her age, and her race. And then also the patient's education level.
What?
Okay. Because that's...
No.
Now, mind you, Indiana is also one of those states where they're required to, if you get an abortion, they're required to do like the informed consent thing. Where they have to give you a pamphlet and they tell you, you know, in Indiana, Liz, we prefer for you to have the child.
Mm-hmm. They also lie about the medical. I have a lot to talk to you about with Indiana. they force physicians with state mandated language that is medically inaccurate. So a doctor has to say to a patient, I am required by the state of Indiana, and this happens in over a dozen states. I'm required by the state of Indiana to tell you, even though it's not medically accurate, and thank God the physicians have workarounds where they say, even though this is not medically accurate, that if you have an abortion, you will never be able to have children. I am required by the state of Indiana to tell you that if you have an abortion, it raises your risk of breast cancer. And it's all a lie. In fact, in North Dakota, they have this law, and they tried to pass another law that said you can't say I'm required by the state and give the caveat that you are lying. Wow. That didn't pass. But back to your El Salvador story, the state of Indiana, tying it together for you, there was a woman named Purvi Patel who was could not get access to a safe abortion and attempted an abortion of her own and miscarried, was sentenced to 41 years in prison.
Yep.
She served 18 months under appeal, and that is in Indiana.
That would be Indiana in the United States.
This is Indiana, Indiana.
Right.
Home of Mike Pence.
In America.
Our vice president.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And what's scary about these setting up these medical reportations is everything. But also that complication, if you've had an, they can define complications from an abortion to, if you, let's say something happened 6 months down the line and you had, if you had an abortion, they could say, they could define that for you as a complication and then go ahead and ask you more questions. Mm-hmm. And so that part of it's very scary. The other thing about abortion, it's the safest medical procedure you can have. It's safer than having your wisdom teeth pulled. In fact, they put these laws in place that are called trap laws, set up to trap these clinics. And one of the trap laws is if you are a doctor that provides abortion, you have to have admitting privileges at a hospital in order for you to practice. Now, that sounds on the face, okay, I want to make sure that a doctor that I go to can have admitting privileges. Well, A, if you go to a hospital, they have to admit you no matter what happens. But B, abortion is so safe that a doctor can't qualify for admitting privileges because you have to show how much of a caseload you would bring to that hospital.
Wow.
And because you won't bring a caseload to the hospital because abortion's so safe, that doctor is then denied admitting privileges. Thus, it could close the clinic.
You see how evil is?
Yeah, I know.
And it's funny because in Indiana, they don't require the similar questioning for women who've had a miscarriage who get a DNC, which is technically
it's
the exact same procedure.
That's exactly
it's
correct.
What happens. One is happening when the fetus is viable, when you technically could proceed through your pregnancy. The other is you've had a miscarriage and there is a procedure. Both the procedure is the same, to remove the body of the fetus from the woman. And they don't require any of this information if you've had a DNC.
Right.
Yeah. And it also, you know, I've talked about a number of times before, you know, I've had two miscarriages, and in different states, if I would lived in different states, they could be considered, you know, abortions, or in some of these laws that states have tried to implement, I would be held criminally responsible for making a decision to save my life in terms of my second one, rather than going forward, you know, with moving forward.
And if you were in El Salvador, you'd be in jail.
I would be in jail. Right. So this all brings me to the work that Liz does with Lady Parts Justice. I actually like the description of this, and this is why this is important for me to lead with. It says, Lady Parts Justice is the first not safe for work response reproductive rights messaging hub that uses comedy, culture, and digital media to sound an alarm about terrifying erosion of access to reproductive rights. Why is this not safe for work, Liz?
You know, because we are in your face. We swear sometimes. You know, we figure this, you know, this is what the fuck times. We need to be saying what the fuck sometimes.
Sunday morning.
That's right. Sunday morning. You can bleep me out. But really for us, It's so crucial that these laws are coming all the way down the pike, and it's happening all the time.
Yeah.
And as we talk about getting out the vote drives, most of these laws are coming out of state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about and they're happening to mostly poor women and Black and brown women, you know, that is who it's happening to. And so, you know, it's massively frustrating to have laws where you don't help somebody economically disadvantaged to raise their kids, and you don't help them to make the decisions they need if right now is not the time for them to have a kid either. And then you shame people for being sexual, and then you are in denial that we live in a society that is sexual. So you're not only demonizing abortion, you're demonizing parenthood, you're demonizing motherhood, and you're demonizing birth control. Therefore, living in some fantasy land where there's abstinence and unicorns where nobody lives. So,
yeah, you know, it never made sense to me. And, you know, even growing up in a household, a church, you know, a household, and it was always described to me as, we don't do abortion, like, we don't do, but we're not going to enforce what other, you know, what other people do in this household. That's not what we do. Like, like, personally, you gonna have a kid, like, you gonna, like, whatever, but we're not going out and marching and protesting against people, you know, so they don't have, you know, the access that they, you know, possibly need at the same time. The other thing that gets me about this, just bringing you into this conversation, is that, you know, I believe that abortion should be safe, legal, rare, right? There are all sorts of things we know on how to make that happen.
Right.
Right? Like, to make it, like, provide opportunity for people to have it if they need it, if they so make that choice.
Right.
But if you want to, I got in an argument with someone before about this. I was like, if you want to reduce, you know, people making that choice, then there's all sorts of things you need to provide to people before they even get there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So why don't we just focus on providing all of that stuff? Then it actually will reduce the necessity for actually using the procedure.
Yeah, I feel like this conversation really taps into the puritanical nature of Americans. I'd actually shared on Facebook earlier this week. I still technically share things on Facebook, Cambridge Analytica. there was an article, I think it was Sweden, that it talked about the difference in abstinence or sex education, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Between Sweden and the United States. And there was, first of all, they start in, like, pre-K. So these are your lady parts in pre-K. Right? These are your boy parts or whatever. And so they are having very age-appropriate, rational conversations. This is a penis. This is a vagina. When you are making love, and or whatever phrase that you, in the English translation, they said making love. But when you are having sex, this is what is happening. This is what is produced. Kind of as sterile as when you break a bone, you go to the doctor. They take an X-ray. This is the cat.
Right,
just
like,
very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Because babies are things that happen. You know,
yes.
Sex is a thing that happens, and their STD rate, their child out of wedlock childbirth rate, every rate that people who say in America they care about and they want to prevent skyrocketing rates of abortion and child born out of wedlock, every category that people here measure, they are excelling at. They are lower in STDs, they are lower in unwanted pregnancies, and they have a real honest conversation about sex education as soon as kids are able to ask questions.
Do you mean that if you talk to people and actually teach them about their lady parts and their male parts and talk about the facts of life of people are going to have sex because they're human beings, that are a result in people being actually educated and making better choices?
Yes. And turns out, so the name of our organization comes from this very topic. It's a super important thing to talk about. I'm glad you brought up Sweden. So there was a woman named Lisa Brown, who's a state legislator in Michigan, and they were trying to propose a state mandated transvaginal ultrasound to anybody who needed to have an abortion. And if you don't, transvaginal ultrasounds are great if you're looking for a cyst, if you're looking for many things. If you don't need a transvaginal ultrasound, it's really disturbing and awful, and it's akin to state rape, quite frankly. So Lisa Brown was arguing against this law, and the speaker of the state house, I think that's how you say it in state legislatures, LJ, am I right? The speaker of the state house?
Speaker of the house.
Speaker of the house.
Same.
Yeah. Banned her from saying the word vagina on the floor and said, if you say it one more time, I'm throwing you off the floor. And she said, I'm arguing a transvaginal ultrasound bill. What would you rather have me say? And he said, something more appropriate like lady parts.
Wow.
So this man... who felt entitled to legislate a vagina, could not say the word. And for me, that was just so outrageous. And so I love that in Sweden, you know, and it's also, too, it's good to remember, like, not to get into something, but, like, when you talk about vaginas and penises and your children really understand that, it really helps them when, because if you use hoo-ha and lady parts with your little kids, if something were to happen to them,
right,
they don't under, if a grown person says, I want you to touch my penis, and you say some goofy word for penis, they don't know that they're not supposed to touch that penis, right? Or that that's a bad thing that someone's asking of them as an adult. So when they can say, somebody touched my vagina,
right,
it's super important. So saying that is like really, God bless Sweden.
Yeah, seriously. You know, seriously.
It's so great. So yeah, so what we do is we make videos kind of exposing these horrible politicians. And I think, and that's sort of our jumping off point. And the most important thing we do that I really love is we spend our whole summer traveling around the country, and we do shows, music and comedy shows, where we gather hundreds of people in a room, and then we have conversations with the activists who live on the ground, reproductive justice and reproductive rights activists, and one of the independent clinics, and they talk about the struggles that they are under these laws, and what they need from the community. Mm-hmm. How can you be helpful? And then the people from my shows sign up immediately to be volunteers, so we're growing local volunteer bases.
Awesome.
And then we do GOTV in every town we go to.
Absolutely.
So it's really fun to work with local activists to get out the vote. It's really fun to simply be a conduit, like doing a show, so that the people who live in the community can talk to their own community about what those needs mean.
Because they know the people. I mean, this is your community. You know the people that work here. You know the people that provide the service. The other thing that I thought was really cute, I think it was last summer, you guys painted and provided like a yellow brick road to an independent center, because there were, you know, there's a lot of protests and things that happen in front of these centers. And so I've already made a, you know, decision that may or may not be difficult for my family, may or may not be difficult for me, because you know hate to burst you guys' bubble, but it's not just single women who are strippers and like the lowest of the low making a decision to have abortions.
Just,
no, so,
turns
so,
out
so, you know,
married
actually
women who have
married women
had kids.
Yeah, right. 65%
too 65% young to remember.
Yeah, 65% of all women who've had an abortion have one or more kids.
Right.
You know, and they're making it for economic reasons, and that's the other thing too. It's like, you know, have a conversation. You know, we do not allow people to make choices. You know, when we talk about pro-choice, I don't really like to say the word pro-choice, because for people who are economically disadvantaged, sometimes they don't, it's not their choice. Sometimes they're looking at economics, and that is the reason that they decide to terminate a pregnancy. And until we have an economic place where people actually, everyone has a choice, you know, I say anti-abortion, I say a lot of things, but I just feel like it ain't pro-choice if you actually don't have a choice. You know, it just isn't.
It's a false
choice.
And considering you have to, like, figured we were reading an article in the show notes about people, women who can't afford diapers for their kids.
Yes.
Like you literally, like two packs of diapers would wipe out your $15 that
that's
you
exactly
have.
That's exactly right.
That needs to last you until you can get to your next paycheck. And when that's the economy that we're living in, we're cutting all types of social services, the social safety nets, such as it still exists, are completely eviscerating. And you want me to produce life and then nurture it?
Yeah.
And like, care for it and love
it. And then
you're
going to demonize me for actually having the child and being poor or being, you know, underemployed at the same time.
And that tells me that it's really not about abortion for
That's
these
right.
people, right? Because if literally your message is we want to reduce abortion and the way we want to do that is to remove all access to birth control, then it's really about controlling women.
Mm.
Then it's really about shame. Then it's really about the second you have your own agency within your own body, you're going to, again, call out and recognize all of these mediocre white dudes who've held this power for all this time and set forth. And, you know, you got to keep everybody back because we're observing way too much.
Well, that's why I'm encouraged about more women entering the political and leadership space. And as we talked about in the beginning of the episode about with the increase of women taking leadership, taking political office, we'll begin to have these larger conversations. And I hope we get to a point where sort of the old guard is pushed out. And listen, it's not just, you know, focused on men, because there are women, too, who are leading these efforts to restrict women's access. They sort of bought in, you know, to this conversation that a woman doesn't have a right to make the decision for her own self. And as I ask people, what gives you the right to have a say so, you know, about my physical body? Like, no,
well, like, you still trying to offer Viagra to the public? I'm sorry.
You know what? Anyway,
okay. Yeah, and also, if you can't recognize, like, two things that drive me crazier than any. One is when men say, I can't believe women are still fighting this fight. And I'm like, and I just say, I can't believe you haven't joined us.
Mm.
That's why we're still fighting. But two, if you can't recognize that having control over your reproductive destiny is not the first step to your 100% your own agency and economic freedom. Like, if you don't recognize that as a political cause and movement and part of your humanity, then we need to constantly be having this conversation, because that is just the truth. That's the bottom line. that is first step into all the other stuff.
And what's funny is the men making these legislative moves and some of the women, they have that. They have economic agency because they're leaving their kids with somebody else.
That's right.
They're not taking their kids. They're not breastfeeding. They're not, even if you're they're not doing any of that at work because somebody else has got that. So they've got that agency without, and they can leave should they wish.
Yes.
And when they do, they'll pay a child support check perhaps, but they get the agency and the freedom without the responsibility.
And that is why we need to get the, it's not just electing women, it's electing women with experiences who understand those things, because the truth is, really well-meaning people without experience, what happens is that side racism and that side sexism, which is erasure because you don't know. And erasure is as powerful as anything else.
Well, thank you, Liz, for joining us for
Thanks
this
for
conversation.
Having me.
And we
got
so much.
Too.
Yes. Thank you guys for joining us today on Sunday Civics. I hope you learned a little something, you know, got a little bit out of your comfort zone. I know some of you who are listening may lean on the conservative side. Well, welcome. Welcome to this conversation. Remember to visit our website at sundaycivics.org to subscribe and get access to past shows, videos of our guests like Liz. You can see video of her on the website, and also resources for you to use to get your community civically engaged. What did you think about this episode? Did you want to rate it? Maybe you want to give it 5 stars. Maybe you want to give a comment on this episode. You can also go to the website and we'll give you a shout out if you review the show. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Sunday at 10 a.m. here on SiriusXM Urban View with more of Sunday Civics.